You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hey, this is David Harris. You are lucky to be watching The Best Practices Show. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And today is going to be one of those shows that's one of the stickiest subjects. It's the nasty side of this business, and I've got the top expert in all of the business on this. And these are things people never want to talk about. But today we're going to be talking about the makeup of a dental thief. Now, you might be thinking, I have a great practice. Every dentist at some point is susceptible to this challenge, and it's dangerous. So we want to give you as much information as possible and help you understand the makeup of what some of these situations look like. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. Now, a couple show notes. We're shooting this live on Facebook like we do with all of our shows, and we're just having a ton of fun doing this. A lot of you add comments, questions to the feed. I'm going to encourage you to do that while the feed is live, and I'll dish them to David while we have him on, and we'll get the answer from the expert himself. Or if you're watching this later on, like many of you do, we're watching the metrics on this. Some of you are watching them late at night, whatever. Continue to add questions to the feed, and we'll do our best to give you answers because we want you to get the most out of this when you're watching them. So, and then keep sending us suggestions for shows. We get them all the time. I am so grateful for all of these, and we are lining them up as best we can. And thank you for all the shares. We are now up over 39,000 followers on Facebook, and over 150,000 of you have visited us in iTunes. So check that out. I don't even know how it works, but people are listening to him too. Now, my guest today, David Harris. Some of you may know David because David has been a regular guest on the show. I've gotten to know him over the years. He's just an incredible human being, and he deals on the side of things. First of all, as a coaching team, we don't touch, but I get the mayday calls all the time from great practices in the best situations, and something is a little off. And I'm just going to tell you, this is the guy I call, and I go, David, help us out. And then he does a deep dive just to analyze the situation. Now, David, I know who you are. I know that many guests know who you are, but if somebody's watching this for the first time and they don't know who you are, tell them who David Harris is and tell us your story.
Thanks. Well, great to be here. I am the CEO of a company called Prosperident. And Prosperident's claim to fame is that we are dentistry's embezzlement experts. So we have about 30 people. We only work with dentists. And our job is to take those calls from Kirk or from a dentist who has concerns about embezzlement or has already found it. And we investigate and report and help the doctor get their money back and hopefully put the thief in jail. So that's what we do. I've been at this for 29 years and some months now. You know how when you get into a business, you know, when you go to business school and they teach you how to start a business, they say, well, first you get your idea. And then you do your market research, and then you do your business plan, and then you get your financing, and then you start your business. That's how the business school doctrine says that it should unfold. Mm-hmm. Kirk knows this already, but I'm going to tell the rest of you, I did none of those things. I got into this business because a friend of mine phoned me and said, I'm in a bit of a jam because I think my front desk person's stealing, and I don't know who else to call. And it was one phone call like that that started me in a lifetime career. I did the investigation for that client. One of those life events that changes everything happened to me 2 weeks later when I went into my own dentist office for an appointment, and I saw at his front desk the same woman that we fired at the other place 2 weeks before, and I was off.
Off and running.
Now we fast forward and we've got a decent sized organization. We've got some specialized groups. For example, we have a group that investigate orthodontic embezzlement because their business model and their practice management software are so different from, say, general dentistry or prosthodontics that they need specialized investigators. So mm-hmm. now we have people who specialize in subsets of dentistry like that, and we've got a great management group here that help keep me on track when I drift, and it's a great company to work with.
Yeah, you guys do a great job. Now, I have to say this before we get started and dive in this. I am one of those people, I do not like spreading fear. That's not what this is about. I certainly don't want to create any lack of trust with the team members that you already have, because there are so many great people out there. What we're talking about are incidents that happen and they come in and they blindside the doctor. So for no other reason, the reason that we're doing this is that we just want you to be aware of indicating signs. And today's show is more about what's behind it, the makeup of what a thief does and how they think, because nobody who's watching this ever went into dentistry thinking that. They went in because they love people, they trust people, they wanted to care for people. And so when this rears its head, it has many circumstances that are ugly. Financially, your trust is gone, you feel embarrassed, shamed. There's so many things, and it's years of recovery. So it's bigger than finance that happens. It's a lot of personal trust and feelings that happen. So David, take us into this. Let's talk about the why before the how. Why is this topic so important when it comes to the makeup of a dental thief?
I'll echo what you said about fear-mongering. My goal here is not to terrify your audience, but to educate them to a phenomenon that probably is going to strike more than half of them at some point in their career. We don't have absolute statistics because there are some parts of this that are just a little bit difficult to measure, but what I can tell you is that there's at least a 60% chance that an audience member will be stolen from at some point in their career. And from the ones who are stolen from, there's about a 50% chance that they will be stolen from again. So, if you break that into how many practices are affected this year, it's probably 8 to 10% of dentists who will be victims this year. And I guess what I'm saying is it's a relatively small subset at any point in time. But when you look at the longevity of a doctor's career, there's a pretty good chance that it happens.
Absolutely.
Another number that the audience should have is that the average amount that a thief gets away with to the point where they get caught, and this is something from our own case files, is about $109,000. Some doctors kind of tend to categorize the embezzlement issues as being, theft of toilet paper out of the staff restroom or something like that. That kind of stuff happens, but there's also some major stuff that goes on. Our website has a section called the Hall of Shame, where we profile embezzlers, and we have, by my last count, about 550 embezzlers profiled there. One of the things that we have is something called the Million Dollar Club. So those are thieves who got away with more than $1 million, and I think there are 7 of them. And then we have the $500,000 Club, Kirk, which is a little less exclusive. That has about 30 members. So, you know, this is well beyond annoyance, and in some cases, the amount that somebody has stolen has really wrecked the doctor's finances to the point where, you know, things like retirement become elusive goals all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's crazy and it's mind blowing, those statistics. You know, I have so many questions about why that happens, but take us into the mind or makeup of a dental thief. You know, why, first of all, why do these people do this? Like, you know, you get to deal with them all the time. Give us some perspective on that.
They probably fall pretty well into two categories, which I will call needy and greedy. So needy thieves are stealing because their back is to the wall financially, and in their minds, they're out of options. You know, they've already borrowed all that they can from friends, and they've, you know, they've gotten whatever family money they can access, and those wells have all run dry, and they still have a mortgage payment. So typically, there's something going on in their life that's reversed their finances. You know, maybe their spouse lost his job. Maybe there's a family illness that health insurance doesn't cover. Maybe there's some kind of addiction, gambling or drugs or something like that, and that's what's draining the finances. But what these people have is more money going out of the house each month than what's coming in. And when that happens, you deplete your savings, and when your savings are gone, you still need to keep a roof over your head and buy groceries. So they're doing it out of desperation. And this group feels bad about this, but they just don't think they have a choice. Then there's the other group, and these people fascinate me. And I call the first group the needy, the second cohort are the greedy. And these people are stealing for a totally different reason. Normally they feel underappreciated by society and manifested by their doctor. So they tend to look at the doctors as being bumbling idiots with good hands. And in the thief's mind, the only reason that doctor is successful is because the thief works really hard to get them booked, to fill cancellations, and to collect money. And they really believe that the doctor should come along to them and say, I'm going to make you an equal partner in my practice because you're that valuable. And for a while, they have the illusion that that's going to happen. And one morning they wake up and they realize that the doctor's never going to do that. And really all they can look forward to for the rest of the 20 years that they plan to keep working is kind of cost of living increases. And they're stealing to prove a point.
Wow.
So these people are not opposed to the money they're stealing, but they're not doing it necessarily because they need money. And a story I tell a lot is about one of our thieves who was stealing, and then she won $3 million in the state lottery. What most people would do if they won $3 million is quit their job.
Right.
You know, probably on the way out the door telling the doctor more or less what they really thought of him or her.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do that. She kept working, and she kept stealing. And this is the part that will make your jaw drop. The amount of money she was taking each month after she won the lotto went up.
Oh my gosh.
So it had nothing to do with scratching a financial itch. It was an emotional one. And is she a little bit unusual? Absolutely. But that's the picture of the greedy thief. They are stealing because they feel the practice owes them the money.
Yeah. And now keep going, David.
I was gonna say, and you know, it's not about strict financial need.
Yeah. Now I know we have a mental health issue in this country, but or in this continent, but this is a whole nother level of this. And let me just say this, David, can you speak to this? You know, sometimes dentists, and especially in our work, we are systems freaks. We organize systems, we create stop gaps, you know, double checking points. Like, I want all the metrics to add up. And you know, in our work with dentists are like, wow, this is a lot of systems work. Yeah, we get everything crazy organized. You're not free from it even when you get there, because these people, they like finding their way through these things. They enjoy that process. Yes or no? Like,
absolutely. And, you know, when we look at the woman who won the lotto and then kept stealing, let's ask ourselves, what was pushing her buttons? Mm-hmm. And the amateur psychologist that's inside me says she was getting some kind of gratification from the act of taking a risk and then getting away with it. Like you might, you know, if skydiving is your hobby,
mm-hmm.
You know, when she took her risk and succeeded, she got some little kind of biochemical release from that. And it was addictive. And after she won the lotto, she still wanted it. In fact, it seems the amount of risk she was prepared to take increased.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a, as I say, a biochemical thing. And yeah, you know, people steal, some people steal because it gives them a rush and they, you know, they want that rush.
Yeah. Now, as we always do when we have you on, David, you know, you have an incredible questionnaire that I love myself, and it's just a checklist. It doesn't certainly indicate for sure, but there are certain signs that pop up. And so David's been so gracious to include it. And certainly, again, not trying to create any fear or anything, but there are warning signs that pop up. And now I want you to talk more about the why behind it. But some of the warning signs are when you have a team member that doesn't take vacation. They're the first one there, last one to leave. They embed themselves in all the processes and overfunction so no one can function. So you're going to see those. And David, tell us how to use the questionnaire, because I want people to use the questionnaire. What happens when you fill out the questionnaire?
What Kirk is saying, I think I'll rephrase a little bit. There are a lot of ways to steal from a practice, but what's pretty constant is the way that people act when they're stealing. And that's the one that's difficult for people to camouflage. And it gives us one of the best entry points into seeing whether we have an issue or not. So the questionnaire that he's referencing is something that we designed initially for internal use. And we made a decision about 6 years ago that the population of dentists could benefit from kind of having direct access to this questionnaire instead of us being able to use it only when somebody called. So we made a public version of the questionnaire, and it's something we sell on our website. But Kirk is a great friend of mine, and I'm honored to be able to offer his audience the chance to take it at no cost. So it's an online questionnaire. It's got 40 questions, and they're all yes/no questions. I think it would take somebody typing with one finger about 15 minutes to complete the questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
So it will ask you questions like, do you have a staff member who's reluctant to take vacation? And if you ask yes, then that's one indicator of embezzlement. Is it determinative? Absolutely not. But what the questionnaire does is it scores answers depending on the correlation of each phenomenon with embezzlement. Some answers are worth more than others, and it comes up with a score, and the score gives us a really good indication of the temperature of the problem. So somebody will get a score back. The highest possible score on the questionnaire is about 275. I mean, we see some who come close to that. I think the highest I've seen is about 230. But actually, once somebody scores more than 80, there's a really strong probability that they're being embezzled.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your audience can take the questionnaire. They will get an email back within 20 minutes or so with scoring and some commentary and the offer to talk to us about it.
Yeah. And my encouragement to any listeners or even our clients is just, it's a standard of care in running your business. Just run the test once a year, or once every 2 years, take the test. I've had some dentists that have embezzled twice and even three times. And I had an orthodontist come to me and he's like, it's the second time. I can't believe this happened to me a second time. And he was so upset with himself. And as you can imagine, and then he's just like, look, he had designed everything. So I just encourage you to, you know, just take the test as a simple standard of care in running your business long-term. It's just something we do periodically. to make sure that we're on the right track. Now, David, I want you to go into, you know, the actual makeup itself. You and I talked prior to going live. There's something called reverse interviewing. You see that. Can you tell us about that? What is that?
Absolutely. We have people who we call serial embezzlers. So these are folks who steal at an office and they get caught and they get fired. And the next day, they're out looking for jobs at other dental offices. And they're usually pretty good at covering their pasts and convincing the doctor who's interviewing them not to, for example, phone the guy who just fired them. And they have various tricks for doing that, and I'm happy to elaborate on those when we have a chance. But one thing about these people is that when you are interviewing them surreptitiously, they're also interviewing you. And their question is really, how easy or hard is it to steal from this person? And if I get the sense that this is somebody who sort of wants me to take charge of the office and wants to be able to abdicate as opposed to delegate from the business aspects of running the practice, then that's the doctor I want to work for, because I can steal from that person easily. So while you're interviewing them, at the same time, there's a hidden agenda and they're looking at you pretty closely. So that's what we call reverse interviewing.
Yeah. So go a little bit deeper on those things you alluded to earlier.
Let me pick up on something you said a few minutes ago about systems.
Okay.
And I love systems, and I love what you guys do in terms of helping a practice get organized and be able to track their numbers and make ongoing decisions from them. A lot of doctors point to the fact that they have good systems as somehow protecting them from embezzlement. And the point I want to make to the audience is that embezzlement is a far more interactive process than probably most doctors realize. So I will hear things a lot. Doctors will say to me, well, we've very carefully set up the permissions in our practice management software so that everybody can only do what they need to do for their job, and they can't do more than that. And don't take me out of context here. I agree totally with that approach. But let's say, Kirk, that you're a dentist and I'm working for you and I want to steal. And I come up with an approach, but what stops me is that my username in your practice management software does not have the ability to do whatever it is I want to do to steal. Do I just kind of shrug my shoulders and go home and join the church choir? Or do I say, okay, I need a workaround?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about motivation a few minutes ago. I'll suggest to your audience that thieves are pushed by some pretty powerful demons. And the fact that you have blocked the first approach that they come up with to steal is not going to convert them into law-abiding citizens. It's simply going to make them unrequited thieves. So what I will do next in that scenario where I'm blocked by my capability in the software is I will say to myself, okay, I need a password that's more capable than mine. The best password for me to get probably is the doctor's, because normally it's omnipotent and, everybody else in the office has some subset of the powers that the doctor's password has.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I get your password? A lot of ways to do it. What works more often than not is to just ask.
Right. And say, I can't get in the computer while the dentist is prepping some teeth and go.
Yeah. There's an insurance company on the phone with a question and, so that works a lot more than it should.
Mm-hmm.
My second approach is observation. So, if I sit there and watch you log in 3 or 4 times, I probably know what your password is.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to go to a high-tech solution, I can buy a thing called a keylogger that is a little USB thing that looks like a flash drive that I stick in your computer and it just records everything you type. And then I've got not only your practice management software, but your online banking password and a few more things as well. So one way or another, I get your password, and now I can do the transaction that I want to. So systems are great, but embezzlers do not simply passively roll over and die because you have thwarted whatever their first approach was. I mean, the first thought,
I just got to pause in that because my brain is hurting already, David.
All right.
Any errors that happen are going to be attributed to the password, which is mine at the dentist. So I'm going to be the one that made those errors or gaps or adjustments that weren't authorized.
Yeah. You know how birds are reluctant to crap in their own nest.
Mm-hmm.
Thieves aren't all that different. So, you know, systems are fine, but they weren't really designed under the assumption that somebody was going to mess with them. You know, the other thing I hear a lot from doctors is, well, I take the deposit to the bank myself. And again, I'll never say that's a bad idea. In fact, I think it's quite a good one. But if my original plan was to steal money out of the deposit and I end up not having access to it, that's not going to make me give up my desire to steal your money.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make me say, okay, so that won't work. What would? So we need systems. We function a lot better in a well-organized practice, but it won't stop a thief. And they have lots of choices. Mm-hmm. You know, another one I hear a lot is, well, you know, I've divided up jobs so that nobody follows the flow of money from, you know, receipt to recording to depositing. Great idea, but it won't stop me.
Mm-hmm.
Thieves. The other thing that gets doctors in trouble about this is that when I talk about embezzlement, what they're picturing is theft of $20 bills, like cash. And let's be clear, embezzlers will happily take your cash, but in 2018, they've progressed well beyond that. And I will tell you that cash, checks, credit cards, even what are called ACH deposits that go automatically into the doctor's bank account, any of those things are vulnerable. I don't want to put out in the public domain necessarily how those things are stolen, but I will tell your audience for now that any of them are vulnerable. And if they have questions, they're quite free to email us and we'll have a discussion.
Yeah, and then David, too, you and I, one of the things that people may not be aware of is this isn't just cash. There are games that get played with insurances.
Absolutely.
And that's a pretty, I would almost argue that's an easier game to play because I don't, you know, the doctor's not aware of what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, if I can create extra revenue and then steal that, that does a couple of things. First of all, it's non-distortive to the doctor's finances. You know, if I, and let's use an example. Let's say I'm playing games with payroll. You know, I'm the person who does payroll in the office and I pay myself extra. That's very self-limiting because at some point somebody's going to notice. So I could probably overpay myself by $500 a month and get away with it. But if I tried to overpay myself by $5,000 a month, sooner or later, somebody's going to realize that. On the other hand, if I'm adding to the practice's revenue and then stealing what I add, the doctor's not poorer because of this, at least initially. And that is a lot more sustainable. The other thing about that kind of stealing, Kirk, is that it opens the door to people who feel bad about stealing from their doctor, but emotionally are okay with stealing from a big bad insurance company. I talk sometimes about the honesty threshold. So this is kind of the emotional hurdle that people have to get over when they're stealing to tell themselves that it's okay to do. And different people have different thresholds to begin with. So for some people, they would have to be in very dire circumstances before they would consider stealing. I mean, topical today is that there's a great big hurricane that's about to hit North and South Carolina. And there are probably going to be people without electricity and who don't have water to drink and things like that. And they might not feel so bad in that case about you know, going into a grocery store that had its window smashed and just taking a couple of bottles of water to drink. So we all understand that in desperate situations, people will do things they wouldn't normally do. But that threshold is different for different people. What I would say is that almost across the board, the threshold for stealing from an insurance company is lower than the doctor who works 20 feet away from you all day and signs your paychecks. So as I say, it kind of allows a participation by a group who might not be okay with stealing from their doctor, but would be from Delta Dental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many dials you can play with in that circumstance. So don't even want to go there. What else do we need to know about when it comes to the makeup of a dental thief?
A couple of things. One is that most people steal, in some cases, I think the first theft happened almost by accident. You know, they made a mistake and it resulted in extra money coming in. And after nobody asked for it back for a little while, they realized that that's a viable way to steal. So sometimes it starts by accident. Other people kind of sit there and think and plan, and then they'll try an experimental transaction or two. So it's almost like if you're fishing, the way that a fish takes your bait. You know, they typically start by taking a little nibble and then they swallow the hook. And exactly the same thing when thieves do it. You know, they will do one or two thefts and sit there and wait for a month, and then they'll go at it more. So they tend to find out by accident. And another thing that the audience should know is that a lot of times, and you had mentioned this earlier, but let me tell people why. Thieves want to be alone in the office when they're doing some of their stuff. Partly because stealing takes concentration, and it's hard to get that level of concentration when the office is open and the phone's ringing and patients are trucking in and out of the practice. And partly because they don't want to be observed. So I agree wholeheartedly with what you mentioned earlier as being a symptom of embezzlement, that these people will come early to work, or they'll stay late, or they'll come in on Saturdays to, quote, catch up on their paperwork. And really what they're doing is part of their process to steal, that they just don't want to be observed when doing.
Right. And as a dentist, you think, gosh, their commitment is just tremendous.
I don't know if we talked about this in previous conversations, but I'll throw it out now. The way that humans deal with the question of trust is fascinating to me. When we first meet somebody, we go through this exercise of saying, can I trust them? And after we do that, assuming the answer is yes, we put that question away and we don't ever want to reopen it again. So, you know, we first of all treat the question of trust as binary. You know, either I can trust them or I can't, is often the way people express it. And we also view it as static in a very dynamic world. So, you know, there may be somebody who, when you hired them 15 years ago, was completely worthy of your trust, but something's changed. And maybe they are no longer as deserving of your trust, but it's not in our nature to kind of open that closet again. So in a lot of cases, something has happened in somebody's life that means that they need to do something to survive, and that something is steal. And you, on the other hand, are blindly trusting them because they've been with you for a very long time. Again, this is not totally a passive process either. If I'm stealing from you, the emotion I want to create in you is this one. As soon as you decide, I could not possibly function without that person. I would be so lost if they ever quit. If I can get you thinking that way about me, then the amount I can steal from you just went way up. So I will do everything I can to worm myself into your life. I will be the person who offers to run your personal errands on my lunch hour. I will be the person who, if you're running behind at the end of the day, will say, no problem, I'll go get your kids at school for you. I will do those extra things. And as you say, you see me working all these extra hours and you don't necessarily have the ability to differentiate working for you from working against you. And you are convinced that I am the best, most loyal employee you ever had, which does a couple of things. It increases the amount of money I can steal. And it also means that when I get caught, you are devastated. Something I hear a lot from thieves, from doctors when they realize who's been stealing from them is, oh my gosh, you know, she was like family to me. I was at her daughter's wedding 6 months ago. That's the kind of comment that comes out a lot. And we know that dental offices are small places physically. You've got a group of people working in close physical proximity. There's some understanding that everybody has in a dental office that kind of differentiates them from the rest of the world, the same way that, you know, you will hear police talk about civilians as being people who don't carry a badge. There's a little bit of that feeling in dental offices as well. So people get close. And if I'm a thief, I want you to get as close to me as you can.
This is just heavy. I know a lot of people are watching this feeling. What else do I need to know about the makeup of these people?
Go back to needy and greedy. Needy thieves feel bad. They just, in their minds, are out of options. Greedy people feel like they deserve this money. So they're entitled. They all overestimate how much the doctor makes. And they think it's really, you know, because I'm sure you've seen this phenomenon where a lot of staff tend to assume, they forget about overhead. You know, they see a doctor who bills $1 million a year, and they think that's what the doctor makes, even though they get a paycheck every month. So to them, that seems like the doctor's making an obscene amount of money. And, you know, you have a staff member who, in their mind, is very integral to the success of the practice, who's making $50,000 a year, and it all seems manifestly unfair. What they may not realize is, you know, while overhead consumes potentially 70% of what the doctor brings in, and then, you know, there's student debt from her education that has to be paid, and what really goes in the pocket is a lot less. But they look at that, and it all seems really unfair. These people tend to be smart. They tend to know their way around the practice management software that's being used in the practice really well. And they play into what I call the clinical fantasy. The clinical fantasy is the thing that I think a lot of doctors have, which is that they didn't go to dental school to run a business. They went to dental school to perform a high art, to be excellent clinicians. And a lot of dentists I run into, and this is simply an observation, not at all a criticism, are reluctant business owners. So when somebody comes along to them and says, doctor, you do what you're good at. You go in the operatory, I'll make sure there's a patient there for you every time you want one, and I'll take care of everything else. That is the answer to the doctor's prayer. And if that offer is given by somebody who has no intention to steal and simply wants to make the doctor's life as positive and rewarding as they can, that's great. On the other hand, if I'm an embezzler, the more I can convince you that you do not need to involve yourself in the minutiae of running your practice, the happier you are, and ultimately the happier I am, because I can steal more.
Okay, so let me take the vantage point of a dentist who might be watching this saying, okay, David, now I'm really paralyzed. What do I do? I hear what you're saying, but what do I do?
Well, let's start with our questionnaire. And it is a good way of triaging between the ideal employee and the one who is presenting as an ideal employee, but that's part of their plan to steal money. And our questionnaire is not reactionary. In other words, it does not lock onto any one characteristic. I get calls from people who say, I have a staff member who refuses to take vacation, and therefore she must be stealing. And what I have to say to that person is, well, it's one characteristic of stealing. But there are other reasons why people don't take vacation. And the example I always give, my dad is 83 years old this year. He's an attorney. And he still works a little bit, but up till about 3 years ago, he was full-time. And he didn't take vacation. And it had very little to do with any desire to embezzle. I'm very certain he wasn't embezzling from the practice where he worked. But my mom wasn't in good health, and she couldn't travel. So if my dad took vacation, what he ended up doing was sitting at home all day with my mom. And they built their marriage around limiting the amount of time they spent together, and they just weren't prepared to experiment with increasing that time. So dad didn't take vacation, and it was for other reasons. So my point is, we don't want to lock onto any one behavior and saying that's deterministic. That means that they must be stealing. Some of our thieves, and I was talking to somebody yesterday who said, yeah, she drives a $70,000 Cadillac. And I asked them, well, how much money does she make each year? And the answer was, well, about $40,000. And I said, okay, very few people will spend, 2 to 3 years after tax income on a car. But that doesn't mean she's stealing. Possibly, she inherited her dad left her the Cadillac, or left her the money to buy the Cadillac in his will or something. There might be some other reason why that's happening. And we can't latch onto any one thing and say, yeah, that means absolutely that this person's stealing. What our questionnaire does is that, in order to give a high score, we've got to be seeing multiple behaviors that are consistent with stealing. Like, to hit our extreme category, we've got to be seeing 5 or 6 of them. So now we're kind of looking at a preponderance of evidence as opposed to one isolated factor. And I will say the same thing to the doctors listening. You've heard some of the things that Kirk and I have said, and it's tempting to say, yeah, my thief does that, or my staff member does that, she must be stealing. No, we got to look at a big picture. We've got to look at a broad series of behaviors and find a number of them to be consistent before I'm prepared to say you're at risk.
Yeah. And David, as always, I'm always so grateful that you're on the show. Now I'm going to encourage people. I'm just hearing a little bit of an echo here. David, can you just hit the mute button on your yep. Skype for just a second? So, as always, I'm going to encourage people to check out your, questionnaire, and you can find that if you're listening on iTunes, you can find that at requests@dentalembezzlement.com, and David will respond to you or one of his team members, and actually you can take the test, and then if you want to, he'll be happy to walk you through it and give you some type of an idea on these. I'm going to have David back, and we're going to discover a couple other things that are just really good preventive measures that you can take in the future when it comes to hiring, when you give responsibility. And there's so many other topics. And again, I just can't say it enough. It's not to make you panic. It's just proper business standard of care long-term that you want to put in place to prevent these things from happening. So David, I'm so grateful to have you on. I want to thank you, buddy. Thank you so much for all your expertise.
Well, and thank you for yours. And it's always fun to talk with you, Kirk.
Oh, buddy, we're going to have a good time and many, many future shows that are coming up. So thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate you tuning in. If you enjoyed today, which I hope you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see from David and other guests, and we'll line them up for you. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.